I loved power club.
Come with me if you want to live.
I loved power club.
No time for time travel.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the No Time for Time Travel podcast. We're coming to you from Southern California. My name is Tony, and joining me all the way from, I guess, a few streets down is Quok.
Hello.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. You know, it's been like, what? Last time we recorded was January. Now it's March. I've been out of practice, I guess. So
it's been January?
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's yeah. It was January because we did that episode about Power World, right?
Oh, right. Yeah.
That was the last episode. So, yeah, it's been since then. But yeah, we're podcast for nerds by nerds. We usually talk about some main topic for the episode. But today, I think we're just going to be jumping around different topics. I have a couple of things. The biggest thing timely right now is Nintendo suing Yuzu and also like the passing of Akira Toriyama. So we'll talk about those things. We have other like news items in between too. But yeah, before going into that, like how you been doing?
Sort of good, I think. So like the past
that's a very questionable answer.
yeah, because like the past 2 weeks I've been trying to get into like the groove of waking up early, like 5:30 in the morning, and doing my exercise stuff. And then like just last week, I don't know what happened. Like I was just I went to play my pickleball with my friends, and I was just walking. This isn't even like from anything else. And then I felt like there was I found out that like the bottom of my foot got a sprain as I was just walking, so then I couldn't walk for like a whole day. So now I'm just like recovering and trying to. I was nipping around it for like a few days, and then now I'm like, oh, I can walk again. It's bearable. I don't even know how that happened.
Where did it just? Wait, what was it again? How did it happen?
I was just walking. Like I literally in pickleball, it's like tennis where I just walk to my position, right?
I walk
and as I step. And as I feel like I even slow down as I peel my foot off the floor, I felt like it felt like a tear on like the bottom of my foot. But then like I had it checked out and it was just only like a minor sprain. But I'm like, oh man, how did this happen? I stretch and everything, and then suddenly it just went like that. It feels like, man, this is really my body getting old, huh?
Yeah, we see those memes all the time, right? Like we see those things about like as a kid, you could do everything you can, nothing happens. And then as an adult, you just like sleep the wrong way and you get back pain the whole day, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know the feeling.
Just walking and then you pull something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, like when we go to the mall like with the kids and stuff, we just be like walking slowly and stuff. And then out of nowhere, my knee would just like buckle or something. And it would just like be painful. I'm like, what the heck is this? I'd be in pain for like a couple hours. I was like, what the heck?
Yeah.
So, yeah. We're not even 40 yet.
Dude, I'm so scared for 40 now, if that's the case.
Yeah. I mean, what? They did say older people that we know did tell us that once we hit 30, everything goes downhill. And it's like, well, yeah, that's true. Now we experience it.
I thought they only meant like not physically, but just like the experience you get, you know, and like the like mentally and stuff. But now it's like, oh, it's physically?
Yeah, health-wise. Yeah. I mean, your joints start to wear out. So
yeah, it's true.
It just sounds so weird when you say it out loud like that. Like, just like, oh, you know, your pain? Oh, it's just because your elbow's like worn out, you know?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Yeah. But it's true. It's true. Yeah. How's the house hunting going?
It's been not going too well, I think. Like, I've been off it just because it's like, man, I think average price is like 7,500 now. Oh, 7,500,000, I mean.
Yeah. I was like, 7,500, that's so cheap.
Yeah, so 700,000. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I was like, oh, okay. So this is like the price, this is like the average thing for now. And before I was looking for like 500, you know, 500 is like very manageable. 600 is like, okay, sure, you know. 750 is like, okay, now I need to start saving and have like a way to like a plan to be like financially stable to sustain it. So now I'm just like looking as well, or like looking very super passively, just because like the whole interest rate and how there's like not a lot of options. I'm primarily just waiting for the bubble at the minute to just burst so I can swoop
funny.
In.
People have been waiting for the bubble since like 3 years ago.
Oh, yeah. So I'm hoping it's now.
I think there was like some talks about the Federal Reserve changing the interest rates again, possibly, but there's like, you know, people thinking like either there's rationale for, you know, either way. But like right now, the houses are still pretty expensive. We still see listings for like, actually, literally our next door neighbor, one day just disappeared. He just got up and left. And then the house was like in construction and then listed for sale. It's like, what the heck? Like he said nothing to nobody, which is one day it was just gone. So yeah, like I know he moved out. He's still up there, but it was just like really random. And then the house was listed for like 1.3 mil. And then so many people looked at it and then nobody like purchased it. They decreased it by like 100K or something. And then maybe a few days later, it's in contract right now, like in escrow.
Oh.
So it's like, whoa, that was fast. Yeah. So like there's still like people buying it for over the value that it should be.
Yeah. There's definitely like still people buying, but at the same time, there's like less people selling as well. And then there's like, I think there's just like for the entertainment or like animation industry is like there's a whole bunch of layoffs as well. And it's like, oh man, that's, I think we talked about this last time too, right?
Podcast. Generally, because the whole past year it's just been a ton of layoffs, mostly everywhere actually.
Yeah, so it's a lot of factors going into play that makes it harder for just people, even though there's some people that could afford it, generally it feels like it's a lot harder. But what you doing, what you been up to?
We've been taking the kids out more on the weekends. We took them to LA Zoo a couple weeks back. I was surprised at the price of LA Zoo being relatively cheap. It's like $20 a person or something, and then kids are cheaper. And then the family thing, yeah, if you get the family pass, it's even cheaper. Like, because you can go multiple times, but it has reciprocal like discounts with other zoos. So we got like a 50% off Santa Ana Zoo with the LA Zoo membership. Nice. So it was really weird because you think LA is like super trafficy, super busy, blah, blah, blah. We went on a Saturday and the parking lot, the first thing we noticed is that there was nobody there. So it was like super empty. And then the second thing we noticed is it was free parking, which is unheard of in LA, right?
Yeah.
So those two things were like, oh, this is like a different world. So we went through the zoo. The zoo's pretty big, pretty nice. The only bad thing about zoos is they do close earlier in the day because at night they don't really have, you know, lights and stuff to turn on because animals need their sleep, right? So it closed around 3 or 4 or something like that. But it's fine as long as you go in the morning. What else did we do? Like, because every weekend we've been trying to do something.
Does it work the other way around? So like if you get like a membership for like Santa Ana Zoo, does it go into like the LA Zoo, or is it only the other way around?
It's dependent on the zoo itself, because LA Zoo's membership is specifically free for LA Zoo, so you can go in for free because you paid membership. And then they have agreements with the other zoos for reciprocal, right? So for Santa Ana Zoo, if you get a membership at Santa Ana Zoo, it's dependent on what agreements Santa Ana Zoo has with the other zoos. So actually, we went to Santa Ana Zoo like a week or two after. Super crowded, harder to find parking. It just felt weird. It was smaller too. It just felt weird that Santa Ana Zoo, it feels more difficult to get through than LA Zoo, you know?
I feel like it's because it's pretty accessible and Westminster, Santa Ana area is pretty... OC essentially is pretty crowded. So
LA Zoo was in the northern part of LA near the mountains, where it was a lot more inaccessible.
Is it Sherman Oaks or like a little bit past there, right? No, around there.
I'm not too sure. Yeah, but it's closer to the valley because you do have to go through some of the mountain areas to like get to it. It's like the 101, you know, like past the 405, the 101 area where it's like kind of like hilly and mountainy.
Yeah,
it's like that area.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I was thinking about LA Zoo just like the other day because I was thinking of taking like my niece and nephew to it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was like, oh, okay, I don't really want to drive that far. So I might take like the Aquarium of the Pacific instead.
Aquarium of the Pacific is nice, but it is pretty pricey and you have to pay for parking. The parking is a parking structure. It's kind of pricey in general.
Yeah.
We're no longer members of the Aquarium of the Pacific. We used to be. But even though we were members, it was just difficult to go to because there's so much traffic. And then parking was, you know, parking in the structure is limited parking. And there's always a lot of school trips at Aquarium of the Pacific. So you're always like, you know, competing with like everyone else who taking their whole school like classes there.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice, though, if you can go. It's just, it's small enough that you can see everything one day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was looking at that too. I was actually gonna take them this weekend or like a few days ago, but then like with the injuries, like oh, can't walk, and then it's like next. So I'm thinking next week, but it's also spring break, I believe. I'm like, oh man,
good luck.
I partially want to, but at the same time, I don't know how many people actually still go to aquariums.
Last year when we were members, we went every time we went, it was pretty crowded.
What time do you guys normally go on weekends or?
We went on weekends, it was crowded, so we switched to weekdays and we went on weekdays and it was still crowded.
Dang, okay.
not as bad, but it was still more than I expected because weekdays are the days where they would do field trips, you know,
for the schools. Okay. Yeah.
But it's still not like, it's not going to be Disneyland crowded. It's like, it's just expect it not to be empty. It's going to be still enough people to be like, oh, that's more crowded than I thought.
Yeah. So
it's fine. You'll probably be fine.
Yeah. But I mean, it's good to know, like you talk about the LA Zoo, because then I used to go there for like art class to draw animals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the weekend was like really nice. And it wasn't like empty, but it was like semi-crowded. So mm-hmm. it was busy enough, you know, there's mm-hmm. people. But now that you mentioned that there's nobody there, I was like, oh, that's a, I was expecting to be that empty.
Yeah, I guess because, you know, we're coming from like a Disney mentality because we're like Disney pass holders. So
yeah,
I feel like on Disney's least busy day, it's still more busy than LA Zoo.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Disney's pretty crazy now, I heard.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I mean, if you want to do the LA Zoo thing, I think like for our membership, like we can actually provide guest passes, like discounted guest passes. So just let me know. I'll have to look into like what the benefits are. I remember that being one of them.
Cool. Yeah. I'll let you know. I will probably ask to see what they want to do if they want to go on like they prefer like the aquarium or like LA Zoo. You know.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm looking at to my left and So for our little one, the baby, like we usually put her in this like rocking chair
mm-hmm.
and it's like a little rocker that's next to me usually. And I can just like push it and rock it whenever I need to.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not here right now. She's downstairs with my mom, but the rocker right next to me is rocking by itself.
And it's, oh, God.
It's, I know how, why. It's because I have the fan on and it's so lightweight that the fan is making it rock.
But yeah.
I'm turning my monitor is covering the fan, so I'm looking at the rocker. It just looks like it's haunted.
Of course this happens to you, Tony. What are we actually checking? It's already off.
No, that fan is always on because it also fans it's pointed up to my computer server, the tower.
Mm.
Because that's always on and it needs to be, you know, cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just looks creepy. Oh, yeah. Anyway. All right. Well, let's get into some of the topics. First thing is interesting that I want to talk about. The headline is California is possibly banning Flaming Hot Cheetos from all the California schools, which is a little misleading of a headline because the law itself actually is it's banning. So Governor Newsom signed into a California Food Safety Act, which outlaws the sale of food and drinks that contain certain ingredients, including brominated vegetable oil and red dye number 3. So because of that, Flaming Hot Cheetos is affected. So yeah, I don't know. What do you think about that? It's kind of funny.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, like, back at school days. Like, I don't even remember having access to Flamin' Hot Cheetos unless we buy it from, like, those carts somewhere else, like a third party.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, you would have to buy it from the vending machine or something. Like, at the school. I remember my high school, you had to buy it from the vending machine.
Yeah, or, like, some sort of snack sale or something like that. And I was like, man, kids have like, Flamin' Hot Cheetos as a part of the lunch thing. That's pretty good.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, this just brings everything back to our days.
Yeah. So, welcome. Yeah. It goes back to what we were saying, how like things were just kind of going back in full circle.
Yeah. Yeah. Which we'll talk about in a bit too. Because we'll talk about it off the recording. But yeah. So yeah, I mean, that's it with that. So the next thing was your time with Steam Family. Can you kind of talk about that?
Sure. I just briefly saw it earlier today. Steam is having like introducing like a program called like Steam Families. That's going to be on like on their like beta client sort of thing. From what I've skimmed through so far, it's kind of like it's almost like a Netflix where they have like a, everybody has their own account sort of thing. But then they can share games with each other. I'm not sure how this will work out in the long run, like with the family sharing, because I mean, I think it'll be cool, but like you mentioned earlier, Tony, it seems like it's kind of like the Nintendo family thing where we essentially have Steam, but we are just part of the part of like the same program-ish, family program-ish. But the only difference is that we can share the games that we each have, which I think is like the best of all worlds in a way.
It's just going back to the whole thing about like when you live in the same household with the old school systems, you play the same system and share the game, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. This is what we were kind of like referencing to earlier when we were saying like everything goes back in like a full circle in terms of like generations of what we used to do. It's like back then there's like physical copies where we can just borrow the game from each other, or like if we live in the same household, like Tony mentioned, then we just like, I don't know, we have the same like system. So of course we have it.
Yeah, I remember when a couple of years back, one of the E3s for the unveiling of the new Xbox and PlayStation, when the Xbox was saying like, oh, they got rid of the game sharing, or they'd make game sharing pretty complicated where you have to like hit the share button, go through like this whole process of like being able to share a game if it's a digital only game. Remember that? Or like you can't, because it's digital only, you can't really share. And then like in the same E3, like for PlayStation, on stage, like two people were like, here's how we do game sharing. And then they just took a copy of one game and then gave it to the other person.
Yeah. Now it's just like the digital age trying to replicate what we did. Like the more physical copies. And like, oh, I guess.
But it's so weird because you can't really share it with friends. You have to share it with family.
Yeah.
Unless your friends are so close that they are family.
Yes, which most of us are.
Which then still goes back to, oh, friends coming over because they're like family. Okay, we play the same system.
Yeah. I mean, same thing with like DVDs and everything, right? It's like, oh, yeah, you saw this movie, want to borrow it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why they just didn't do that. Where like you want to share it to someone, it gives like a temporary access code.
Yeah.
And then like after a while, it just disconnects it or something.
Yeah. I feel like it's just a profit thing.
They could actually do this in a way that works where, I'm just thinking out loud now, when back in the day, you let someone borrow your game, you don't have access to the game until they return it, right?
Yeah.
If they did it the same way where like you provide a temporary key for the other person to play, and once they complete the game, they log out of that key, then you get the game back for your access.
Yeah.
You know? Because that prevents the whole like multiple copies lowering sales, you know?
Yeah. But I also feel like it's true, but I also feel like a lot more games now are have online multiplayer versus like or like just like multiplayer versus like before, where there's a lot more single player, and now a lot more games are like what you call it? Like as a service game.
Oh yeah,
as well. So just like the whole gaming model has changed over the past years, that it makes it feel like everybody should have their own copy to play with each other in a sense.
Yeah, I never really liked that. I think like Nintendo Game Boy Advance did a really good thing where for the link cable, certain games, you didn't have to have both people have a copy of the game. Mm-hmm. The certain games, like I think it was Mario Kart or maybe one of the other ones, where the link cable itself would be able to stream a limited amount of data to put like a small copy of the game on the other system, mm-hmm. just with the primary features to enable multiplayer.
Mm.
So then you could have one Mario Kart link cable to four different Game Boy Advances and everyone plays on the same game.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Except I never really had friends with link cables to even.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other thing. Having real friends.
Yeah.
Instead of random people that we could play on with now as well. I think that's like one of the benefits of like the current digital age of gaming, is just we could play with random people and just like connect with them. Even though some of us might not want to play with random people and just play with our own set of friends, but it allows people who don't have that, have access to that many friends, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's also because of the, people have social anxiety. They can't go out. Right. Or people are too busy. They can't go out, or the way they play the games at all times. They can't go out. Right. So everything's more online. I mean, I think, I don't know if I told you this, one of my cousins, it's been a while, I haven't talked to him, but like he met his wife through World of Warcraft and they never met in person before that. So they met through World of Warcraft and then met in person like years after.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. It's just like a different way of people meeting and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also videos online of like, I think it was like some like birthday event that the wife was having for her husband, and she invited an online friend he played online games with and never met in person. And then like they met and then they were like so happy, you know, because they've been friends online but never in person because they're across the country. Like she flew him in or something.
You know what it reminds me of? Ready Player One.
Oh, you're right.
I mean, to be fair, Ready Player One is based off of like actual incidents like this in the real world, but
yeah,
that's what I thought of.
Yeah, no, that is true. So our world's getting towards that way.
It's very true. Yeah, yeah. There's definitely been like some cool advances in the game industry, and definitely some parts where we feel like it's unnecessary changes or like or stupid changes, I would say.
I'd say the cool advances are with the hardware of gaming, like VR, AR, motion, you know, all that stuff, and then the other part that's going backwards is the software side, like games as a service, you know, subscription fees, all that stuff.
Yeah, all like those models, game payment models and all that stuff, I agree. It's been really, and even like in terms of like game designing and everything, it's been not as great as before.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm okay with games as a service as long as the base game is like super cheap or affordable or free.
Yeah.
But going back to Mortal Kombat 1, paying a premium for that and having a bare bones game in which the rest of the game is games as a service is highly infuriating. Like, what the hell? You know?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I had a chat like this with my friend as well about how like there are so many good games that are charging reasonable prices. Like Power Word was like $30, I think.
That was 20 something.
Oh, cheap. I mean, yeah, 20-something, 30, something like that. And there's like, was it Helldivers, which is like the recent game?
Oh, yeah.
The Stormtrooper game. Yeah, it's like $40, which is like on like the higher end of things, but it's good and it's reasonable versus something like, I think like, is it Star? What was it, that game?
Starfield,
which is like 60, 70, something like that. Starfield 60-70. And there's like other games such as what was it, Skull and Bones, the pirate one, that was like 70.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, those are like done by AAA companies, and for like $70, that doesn't have anything innovative or anything groundbreaking aside from just they are a corporate company, so they charge more. But then like the game aren't even that fun or as great as like the games we listed of like Helldivers or like Power World, where people just, it's on like the 30, 40 bucks range. And it's from like small indie companies. And, you know, there's a lot of games where it's like 20 to 40 range that mm-hmm. feels reasonable. Like you mentioning, if games were affordable, it feels like, okay, it's worth the game. It's worth the price or more than worth it, essentially. If they charge like 50s, like some people would be more than happy if they could just play it or like be as good as that and just, they felt like they got their money's worth, you know? Mm-hmm. But when you pay like 70 bucks or something, 60, 70 bucks, you expect something to be really amazing. But most games now, they have like day one patch. So I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, okay. Well, that's not even like a full game or full, I guess like a fully, I would say, playable game on like day one. You buy a game to have it not work on the first day. And yeah. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah, or I think the other thing that kind of frustrates me too is that when games get released and then they have a plan for the entire season of releasing mm-hmm. additional characters where they have the footage available for you to see, which then gives me the idea of like, you guys probably already finished these characters, but you're just purposely holding it back, mm-hmm. you know? Like, yeah, like I don't know. I just feel like for games as a service, if it's a true service, I'm a little bit more okay with that rather than the artificial service where we actually made this game of 30 characters, but we have 10 of them that we're just going to lock away and release over time just because we can and then charge for them, you know?
Yeah. And it goes back to like, I think you mentioned at one time, it was one of the fighting games. It was Street Fighter or something? Or Mortal Kombat, I mean, where it was Street locked Fighter, up?
Street Fighter. Okay. Street Fighter did the first annoying lock. Like, they locked it on the disc. It was on the disc.
Yeah, even, it was even worse.
Yeah. So DLC, they were arguing like, no, that's not downloadable content. DLC stands for disc locked content. Like, what? So when you paid for those characters, it's literally like a 100 kilobyte file that just activates the file on disk for them to use.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of like those type of DLCs where it's just like, oh, okay, well, here's a new skin. Here's some more stuff. Pay us a lot more money. Yeah. I'd rather have like content like, oh, it's a whole new level with everything. And like if the new characters or like more add more to the story mode for fighting games or something like that, or just if they are new characters, they shouldn't be locked behind something like that. It should be like it's kind of like what do you call it, it's like League of Legends, how we used to play there. That's like mm-hmm. a game of service that I feel like is successful because
base game is free and you have like, you know, like Brawlhalla is also a base game is free and it's mm-hmm. a games as a service as well. A lot of those, like, I think games as a service for base games that are free are probably the only ones I'm okay with. Mm-hmm. Everything else is kind of like, I'll deal with it, but I don't like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's free, so, like, we can't really complain about it because you have the choice. You didn't spend, like, 70 bucks on it, you know? You spent, like, 70 bucks on a full game. You spent a full game.
Yeah, I mean, there's a limit, though. Like, the way that Brawlhalla does it is similar to League of Legends, where you have, like, what, 10 champions that you kind of, like, can use and it rotates, right? Mm-hmm. Other games as a service, Dead or Alive, tried this once, and I hated it. When you got the base game that was free for Dead or Alive, like, it's just mm-hmm. two characters, and that's it. Two characters, never changing. That's it. So in order to play as any of the other characters, you pay per character. Up until the cost of the total game, which is all characters.
You can't even unlock it?
No. Like, without paying? I mean, Yeah. It's a base game of two characters, and you pay for each character that you want to play as. So it was like, what the hell?
If it's like two characters, that just sounds like a demo.
Essentially, it's like a demo, and you just pay for each additional character you want to the demo until you have all characters, and it's no longer a demo. That's pretty much how it is.
Yeah, it's kind of stupid.
I don't know if they continued that or not. I just know that the time that they did do that, I never wanted to go back to a Dead or Alive game.
I definitely like games where they feel complete when you buy it. Because now I'm very skeptical of a lot of games, of wanting to buy games more so now than before. It's just because you buy a non-complete game. You pay full price for a non-complete game, and then you're just expecting bugs on like the first week or something, and you're just like, nah, it's cool. So normally, like, I just hear like people review on the like the first week to see how it is first, to see what kind of bugs are the game breaking, that sort of thing. It's even worth it for my time, because like,
yeah,
like you don't, we don't have a lot of extra time sometimes,
and
sometimes we just want to go in, play the game, get out, not go in, deal with like frustrating bugs, and then not get to play anything. We're just more aggravated by the bugs than anything. We can't relax, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of that whole fiasco with the day before. Remember, like people were paying early access for that, like the game just like terribly shut down.
Yeah, it
was unplayable and then shut down.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's why, like you mentioned earlier, if games were affordable or like reasonably priced, I guess, for what it's worth, then I think it's a great investment. But most games now, they're like, or triple A ish games, they're like $60 to $80, and then they're not complete games, or they're broken games, and then you just bought a broken game. It's like buying retail price or full retail price for a used car,
or buying a car but you have to pay extra for the steering wheel.
You mean the Tesla? Your add-on stuff?
Oh gosh, yeah. Yeah.
Here's a cup holder, $200.
Oh, but the new car, yeah, the new cars are come standard with it now.
Yeah. Yeah. But I still remember the first time like you got it. I was like, oh, this is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, and I was paying a premium for that version too. Now it's like cheaper and you get all the stuff in it.
Yeah.
So what's it called? To play devil's advocate, right? You're saying like $70 for a triple A game. If you go back in the 90s and look at the price of SNES games, they were in like the 79-ish like range.
Yeah, 60. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 79-ish and 64 games too. Like that was insane. It only went down because the media changed from cartridge to CDs.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. So in a way, you can argue that games going back to 70 without counting inflation is still cheaper than back then. Right.
Yes, but at the same time, games were complete.
Yeah. Well, and then there were also games that had bugs that could no longer be patched because you know, cartridges and whatever.
Yeah.
But it's so weird though, because one of the things I did as a kid, I loved finding glitches and activating glitches.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you find a glitch, it's patched the next day or something, so you can't like have fun with glitches.
Yeah. I mean, there's also like, there's a borderline with glitches, right? There's ones where it's kind of like game breaking, where you really can't play the game. And there's one where it's just, there's like things that speed runners exploit, you know? Those kind of things are fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the one where it's like, oh, I can't load the game.
Yeah. I actually like doing the glitches that break the game. Like, I think on Mario Kart 64 on Choco Mountain, there's a portion where you know, you hit the R button, you kind of bounce your car, right? So there's a portion on Choco Mountain where there's a wedge between two mountains that you can use the R thing to jump your car, but you can jump slowly up higher and higher and higher. And then one of two things happens. When you get to the top of the mountain, either you land on the very top and then you get stuck in a 360 spin, like you're falling infinitely, but on the top of the mountain, and then you have to restart the game. That's one thing. Or the other thing is you find a hole in the wall, like a no clipping area, and then you just pass through and fall into this deep space. So those are things I just did for fun for the Mario Kart 64. And it's like, I would spend hours just like going through game facts and just like going through those glitches just because I wanted to see what happens when you break the game.
See, but I mean, I think that's fine because like you actually have to go out of your way to break it, right?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, this one is not like
in the middle of it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm walking forward on the tutorial, game crash.
Which is funny you mentioned that. The Lilo and Stitch Game Boy Advance game, the second game, in the very first level, if you don't jump over a crate and you walk forward to the crate, they messed up the game. They forgot to put a clipping on the crate. So then you fall through the crate, you land off screen on the bottom, but because that was not a zone that you fall and die, you basically are now off screen in that area forever. Like you can move, you can move your character all the way to the end of the map, but because it never triggered a dying zone,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So then you're stuck. And yeah. I found that out on accident because I was having my daughter play it, and she doesn't know how to jump, right? She just moves the character forward. So she moved it right through the no-clip zone of the crate and then fell down, and she's like, where is Stitch? I was like, wait, where is Stitch? So I went back and restarted level, had to do it again, and then went through. I'm like, oh my gosh, she found the glitch.
Yeah.
And I haven't found anywhere online that talks about that glitch. So that's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. And it wasn't even like an old game. It was in the Game Boy Advance era, which is like, they should have good QA during that time. So
I want to see when that is now. See, Lilo and Stitch 2, right?
Yeah, let me see. Maybe it is online. I don't know. Let me see. Stitch 2. Glitch. That's funny because all it does is it brings up a video game called Lilo and Stitch 2. Stitch has a glitch. Oh, no, that's a movie. There's a movie called Stitch Has a Glitch. Yeah, I can't find the game.
2004. So 20 years ago.
Yeah, I can't find the... Yeah, I don't know. I looked before and I couldn't find any documentation about that glitch in that game.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm just thinking back to it was 20 years ago. That's still quite a long time ago.
Yeah. I guess.
I mean, it's still in the age of not where it's like physical copies.
Physical cartridge. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when Mortal Kombat Tournament Edition came out on Game Boy Advance, I was one of the first people to get the game?
Yeah.
Wait, let me see. I want to see you.
No less.
What?
I said, I expect nothing less.
Oh, yeah. Mortal Kombat. I think it was Deadly Alliance. Let me see. Deadly Alliance. Let's see here. Game Facts. Cheats. No, it was Tournament Edition, I think. Let me see. I'm just checking something. You guys back then, because I was one of the first people who had it. Then I found some glitches. And I submitted it to Game Facts. And I think the information might still be up there. Aha! It is still up there. Let me give you the link. So, to the listeners, Mortal Kombat Tournament Edition for Game Boy Advance on GameFAQs. I actually submitted some cheats and codes or whatever and glitches on that game, and it's on GameFAQs and it still is. I gave you the link. Did you open it?
Yeah.
Do you recognize which username's mine? The contributed by part?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. You see how many I submitted for that?
All of them.
Yeah. That's so crazy. Yeah, I don't know. I just never thought that I'd be a submitter of these things.
I'm surprised Game Facts still exists, to be honest.
I think it's great. It's great for, like, you know, historical.
It's like the wiki of games.
Pretty much. Yeah, this was before Wikipedia.
Yeah, it really is.
I'm surprised it's still around with newer systems, because if you look on top, like PS5 is there too.
Oh,
so yeah, people are still doing this. Is there? Let me see. There's a Q&A. I don't see actually any new FAQs though. Are there? There's mostly Q&As. Let me see. Final Fantasy Rebirth. Let me see if there's anything here. Oh, there are guides. Final Fantasy Rebirth has a guide. Wow. It's actually much better. It's more wiki-like. Look, let me show you. Because before, back then, everything was just like a Word document. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
The FAQs were giant Word documents. But if you look now, like, for example, this guy that I just sent you for PS5, Final Fantasy Rebirth. It's, like, really nicely laid out.
Wait. Oh, I see. It's just introduction.
Yeah, but on the right side is the table of contents.
Oh, gotcha. Oh, yeah, you're right. It's, yeah.
Man.
Yeah. I'm so surprised because, like, I feel like a lot more people kind of made a switch over to wiki, mm-hmm. where they have like the game wiki essentially,
mm-hmm.
and then which is similarly organized like this. But I'm just surprised GameFAQs is still around, to be honest.
No, I am too. I don't even know how to log in. I don't know if I can still log in, actually. Can I log in? I don't know what my password is. Forgot your password. Let's see if my account still exists. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, anyway, we can move on to the next thing. I just have a couple things that are pretty quick before we get to the main two topics.
Sure.
There's a Crow reboot. The trailer's out. It doesn't look half bad. It's fine. It stars Bill Skarsgård. Looks fine. He kind of looks like the Joker, though. the Jared Leto Joker.
Oh.
Let's see. There's also the new TV show based on Fallout called Fallout. It's fine. I don't know if you care about that.
No. I mean, I've seen the trailer. I never played the game to understand the lore or anything. But, I mean, it looks cool. It looks okay.
Yeah. It doesn't feel, like, unique. Like, that story's kind of been done before, you know?
Post-apocalyptic thing?
Like, specifically, you know, living underground until the apocalypse already happened and going back up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. And then the other one is Borderlands. Did you see the trailer for that?
I saw that one. Very, I guess, unique, I guess. I don't know much about the Borderlands lore. I played it. So it definitely had similar feel, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Man, I thought the whole thing was miscasted.
Really?
Yeah. Especially Cate Blanchett.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, in terms of cast, it's like, it's a bit off, but I think, like, the style, like, visually, the style and, like, mm-hmm. the humor, it seems to be there.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not really sure. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. I don't know.
I'm mostly there for, like, was it the robot? Because he's the only one that I find funny.
Jack Black.
Is he?
Yes, he's Jack Black.
Oh, no wonder.
I was like, why don't you just use the same person to voice the robot in the game?
Yeah.
I mean, Jack Black's fine. He's always good in any voice role he does.
Yeah, Jack Black's good.
Yeah. Okay, so going to the main two things, let's first talk about Akira Toriyama.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you who don't know, Akira Toriyama just passed recently. He passed away with a subdural hematoma, and he was decently young, right? Like,
he's under 70, like 60 something, right?
Yeah, like I think it was like maybe 68. Let me check.
Yeah,
68. So March 1st. So yeah, that was pretty crazy to hear. Sad.
Yeah.
And he's actively, you know, he was still actively involved with Dragon Ball Super.
Oh yeah. Just in case the listeners don't know, he's like the author or the creator of Dragon Ball series.
Which is also surprising to us at some point because we're like, wait, we thought he was a lot older.
Yeah. I think like the series came out when we were like kids, right?
No,
like,
the series came out even before that, I thought.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. And were we born yet?
I don't think so because I think Dragon Ball came out 84.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So slightly before we're born. So he's like in his 30s. Early 30s, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, he did a lot.
Yeah.
And he's been doing it for like the past almost 40 years, essentially. Or 40 years.
Yeah, pretty crazy. And also, like, not only that, right? Like, yeah, he did this when he was in his 30s, but then at the same time, his work has influenced everything.
Yeah.
Like, you can trace a lot of things back to Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
Even Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, spiky the whole collection. Oh, yeah. Spiky hair, right? Collects 7 Chaos Emeralds.
Yeah.
And then you become Supersonic, in which he turns yellow.
Yellow.
With, like, charging up. So it's, like, it's totally Dragon Ball. A lot of things are influenced by Dragon Ball. Just that live action movie was terrible. You know, he came back to do Dragon Ball because the movie was so bad. It made him hate Dragon Ball and wanted to fix it.
My God. Dragon Ball, the live action?
Yeah, he hated that movie so much. So he came back to continue with Dragon Ball Super.
Oh, so that's how Super got started.
I think that was one of the reasons, but yeah, like it was like the catalyst. To atone. Yeah, but yeah, he also did a lot of other stuff that you might, you know, people might be aware of, like Chrono Trigger and Dragon Quest.
Did you Chrono Trigger? I didn't know that.
Yeah, look at Chrono Trigger, dude. Like, look at the character.
Yeah. I mean, I saw the resemblance. Like Dragon Quest for sure. Like I knew. Like but then like. Yeah, Chrono Trigger's it's similar, but I didn't make the connection at this time.
Yeah, he is one of the people in there. He did the character design for like Chrono Trigger.
Mm.
Yeah, but yeah, I think like, well, okay, so Dragon Ball Super, He didn't work on it by himself. It's interesting. So he worked it with Toyotaro. So he chose Toyotaro as his successor. Like a couple years ago, he said he handpicked him to be his successor, which is interesting because on Dragon Ball Super, Toriyama still handles the entire story. Toyotaro has input, but then Toriyama still has to approve everything.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, yes, he did kind of train Toyotaro, but Toyotaro is more of an artist. He's more of like he animates, he draws the characters. He creates the manga part. He doesn't do the story as much.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen. They did say Dragon Ball Super is on a hiatus right now for after the next release. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of weird because it's like, if it continues, it's kind of like Toyotaro will never be able to live up to like Toriyama, right?
I mean, I guess only time will tell, but yeah, he's essentially living in the shadow of it. But one thing we know is like at least like the artwork will be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the story. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like Dragon Ball story is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see how it goes, I guess.
The story is simple, yes, but I think the way it's executed is what makes it good. Like how it builds up, right?
Oh,
and then
yeah,
the character development. Like those are the things that really are key. Like who cares about the main story? The general like overarching story is just like good versus evil, right?
Yeah. So I feel like going back to what you're saying, like building the basis of everything, I feel like Dragon Ball was like the kind of established that formula for a lot of recent animes. Kind of like, mm-hmm, okay, you have this arc where this protagonist faces a villain, he'll lose, go do a training arc, come back, beat him, repeat. Like stronger enemy comes and then get defeated, training arc, defeat, you know? Because that's, mm-hmm, essentially what Dragon Ball, the formula of Dragon Ball is. And a lot of animes I see now are like that. It's just like, okay, this enemy is here, come face a new enemy, training arc, come back, defeat, that's it, repeat.
I mean, it's also Rocky, right? So
yeah. It's very general, but it's just like for like the anime series, like we see it so often because it's a long running series. We see it like from Vegeta to like Frieza to like Cell. Whereas like in movies, we just see like one segment of it, but in like throughout like a whole series of Dragon Ball, we see it repeat so much that it's just ingrained in our mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, which I think is why the Dragon Ball movie did terrible, because there was no like that portion of building it up. Not only that, the fighting was terrible too.
Oh, yeah. If the fighting's bad for Dragon Ball, a fighting anime, then it's going to be pretty bad.
Yeah. It's weird. It's like they were shooting, the CG was, they were shooting kind of like colored smoke. It didn't even feel like energy beams. Like if you look at it, it really just looked like colored smoke.
Yeah.
I feel bad because like the cast in there was like, it's not their fault, but like recently Justin Chatwin was like saying like he's so sorry that they butchered the movie.
Is he like this Goku?
Yeah, he's Goku. He was
okay,
Goku. But like it's not like he wrote it, right?
You know?
So he was just acting.
Yeah.
He's a good actor. Like, I like him as an actor. I like the cast, most of the cast in that movie. Like, Chow Yun-fat was in it as Master Roshi.
Oh, right? Okay, yeah. I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, they're good. And James Marsden was amazing as Piccolo. The story just sucked. So, yeah. I think James Marsden was probably the best part of that movie as evil Piccolo.
Mm.
So, yeah. But yeah, they're doing this whole marathon tribute with... I think they already did it, maybe. I can't remember. But Cartoon Network or one of the, I can't remember anymore. But it was a marathon of Dragon Ball to honor Toriyama.
Dragon Ball Z or the whole series?
I don't know. I don't remember. I remember seeing the heading for that. I'm like, oh, that's cool that they're doing like, they had a whole like timeline of like when they're playing what.
That's cool. That's great.
Yeah. All right, let's go on to move on to the next thing. I feel like every topic we're talking about today kind of harks back to like full circle, like, you know, the Crow is a reboot. Fallout's a game that's going into a show. Yeah. Borderlands into a movie. Toriyama. Yeah. Next thing is Nintendo. Yeah, next thing is Nintendo sues emulation company, which brings back to the 90s as well. So, yeah. So for those of you who don't know, big news was Nintendo was suing the company that makes the emulator called Yuzu, which is a Nintendo Switch emulator that was being sold. Side note, Yuzu is the name of citrus fruit that I really like. It's a Japanese citrus fruit, and I put it in a lot of stuff. It's very, very good. So you should try out Yuzu. yeah, but anyway, they won. I guess they didn't win. It was a settlement, but it was like a $2.4 million settlement. So I would say Nintendo won.
Yeah.
Yeah, after that lawsuit, after that settlement, a crap ton of other people who do emulators, they just like dropped out. Like someone said, oh, they want to focus on their family, they're going to drop out, which sounds a little bit like Nintendo's threatening to kill their family. another one was like, they're just like taking a step back. And just, there was just like a lot of people dropping out. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I have thoughts about it. I mean, my general thought about it is Nintendo Switch emulation is already questionable as it is. So Yuzu being sued, I'm like, that sounds reasonable. But then the other older non-in-production systems, I'm like, well, now you just caused everyone to drop out. There's no game preservation, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, if you start selling it, then okay. Yeah. It becomes a little bit dicey. But definitely, I don't know. It's definitely like Nintendo is always, it's like the, I feel like they're the part of the, they're like the Disney of gaming in a way, one of the Disney of gaming. So, but they're very strict on their property. So I'm like, man, I don't know. Like I grew up on the emulation era, or like on emulation, you know? So I don't know how I feel about it. Because at the same time, Nintendo introduced like emulation, at least for like their Nintendo games on their Switch and stuff. Mm. So it's like, I don't know if it's just because like, they want to monopolize it versus like making it open source with the other companies that we have.
Yeah, it's weird. It's and you're right. They are kind of like the Disney of video games because like what? Nintendo has a very well-known mascot in Mario, which is like Mickey. They have like movies with Mario now, like Mickey, and then they are so happy like Disney, and they have a theme park now like Disney. Like they are pretty much Disney at this point.
Yeah.
And then just having a stronghold on their old stuff. I mean, it is interesting because you did bring out like they did bring the emulation stuff out because of Nintendo Switch's online service. I don't know how I feel about that, you know, leading them to like suing all the old emulator stuff because like, it's not like they have the rights to every single game that was on their old systems, right? Because some of them are still owned by those old companies. But then what about those companies that don't exist anymore? Then who owns those?
Yeah.
So like Data East, is that still around? I don't even know, but that's something in my head right now. Data East, you know them?
Sounds very familiar.
They did a lot of games back then in the 16-bit era. Let me see. Defunct. So they were bankrupt in 2003. They have a ton. I know they had a ton of video games for those old school like systems, like NES and Super Nintendo. Like what happens to those games, right? Like the only way you can play them now is through emulation, right? So I don't know. But yeah, the whole thing about selling the emulator, that is, yeah, that is tricky. Not only that, selling an emulator for a system that is no longer in production or supported can still be kind of okay, I think. Like, there's a gray area there. But selling an emulator for a system that is currently in production and supported is very, very risky.
Yeah, especially a Nintendo system.
Yeah. However, I can tell you, it's not technically illegal. Because there's a precedence for this. I don't know if you remember, back in the days of Fry's Electronics, there was an emulator for PlayStation 1 that ran on the computer called Bleem. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Yeah. Bleem, it was sold in Fry's Electronics in many retailers. Sony did try to sue them, and the judge actually ruled in favor of Bleem.
What was the reason?
I can't remember the reason, but it was legal to have that be used to play backup copies of, you know, games that they already own. But Bleem was still bankrupt because they spent so much money on legal fees, so they couldn't continue.
Yeah.
So yeah, they still shut down. But legally speaking, at that case, it was fine. So I'm guessing Yuzu. Yeah, I'm guessing Yuzu probably was like banking on that.
Mm.
But I don't know what happened with the Nintendo stuff. Something about like special keys for the device is illegal or something like that.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, Nintendo is definitely one of like the trickier corporate to go against, because like having third parties with their Switch before, like third party firmware and stuff with their Switch before, or hardware or accessories, already made things tricky and not work with the Switch, right? Like in the earlier stuff, like the the docks and stuff like that. So that even that took a while, and so this is their own system, like emulating their own system is essentially making a copy, and I feel like that's tricky. Even though like as legal it is, I think I remember there is something about PlayStation. Is it Japanese? No, right?
Yeah, this is Sony.
Oh, Sony. Oh, Sony's Japanese. Okay. Yeah, okay. Because I was just saying, remember somewhere about how laws, like legal laws in Japan, are a little bit different so that, than like the US. So I'm just trying to think if that plays a role or not. But yeah, anyways, I don't know. Nintendo is really, really tricky to go against, because they're very strict about everything, about their IP and their system and everything. So as much as I agree that I think that the legal thing you had before was like, as long as the person owns the original copy of the game itself, having an emulator is legal, technically.
Yeah, because if you own the system, you can transfer your system's BIOS file over, and you own the copy of the game, then you can do it. Then it's supposed to be legal. Yes. That is what was ruled. I think Nintendo won because Yuzu provided the BIOS of the systems, or somehow was easily accessible. I think that was what did them in. Yeah. But you know what's funny here? I'm on Quora from back in 2022. Someone wrote, why doesn't Nintendo sue emulators like Yuzu? And then someone wrote, there's not much to sue. it's illegal to use an emulator, blah 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 blah. And I'm like, yeah, that comment didn't age well. Like, it's a very specific question that was answered. Yeah, so it's funny. Yeah, it says like, Nintendo has no reason to go after the emulator or their creators. They will target the host for ROMs and BIOS files. No, they went for the emulators.
That's funny.
It's weird though. They say that the ROM hosting is what they should go after, right? The government website archive.org has the biggest like repository of that because of game preservation. You know, like, for the purposes of game preservation, that is why it exists, and legally it's on there. So I'm like, well, then can Nintendo even go after them? You know?
Yeah. It's not like going against the government.
I know.
But yeah. That'd be kind of a fun fight to see. Nintendo versus US government.
Oh my gosh. I mean, isn't there a home court advantage there? Nintendo versus USA in the court of the US.
I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this whole thing. Like, I agree that Yuzu Switch emulator is pretty questionable if they charge for it. Although it's weird, I don't remember ever paying for it, because it kind of came with my Steam Deck.
What?
Well, it didn't come with the Steam Deck, but it was on the Steam Deck store as a free download.
Oh.
So I don't remember ever paying. But then it was bare bones, so I actually had to dump my Nintendo Switch BIOS file.
Oh.
Otherwise, it wouldn't work. So it was actually very specific. Uh-huh. So maybe that was because it was early development and that was the case. And then maybe, because I haven't updated that in like, what, 2 or 3 years. So why, I don't know. Yeah, I was just curious to see how well it would run on this on the Steam Deck. And it was questionable. It wasn't like that super great. I mean, I have a Switch. Why would I use it on the Steam Deck? It's more like convenience only.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Anyway, all right. Let's move on to game time. What should we do for game time? Let me see. I wonder if this will be fun. I'll tell you the name of an emulator. It's always going to... Oh, yeah, okay. I'll tell you the name of an emulator, and then you tell me what system it's for.
Oh, God, okay. Let's do it.
Okay. First one is... how about Visual Boy Advance?
Game Boy Advance?
Yep.
Okay.
How about Moopin 64 Plus?
N64.
Yeah, these are pretty easy. how about ZSNES?
SNES.
Yeah, I don't even know why I'm doing this.
I use that one.
Yeah, I used to, back in the day of 90s, it ran like kind of through DOS, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I used that through DOS, and then later on, when I was like more comfortable with the Windows side of things, I used SNES 9X.
Oh, yeah,
that was it was nicer because it was like a Windows GUI, so it was like a application.
Yeah.
Let me see what else here. This one's a little bit more difficult. MAME.
Isn't that MAME, like Neo Geo and all like the arcade games?
Yeah, it's arcade, but it was like, what was the acronym for? It was like multi arcade system or something. Let me see.
Yeah, something like that.
Multiple arcade machine emulator.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about let me see. How about PPSSPP?
PSP games.
How did you know that?
there's a lot of P's and there's an S.
Yeah. I like this one. It's called Drastic.
Oh god, that's so hard. Okay. Drastic, huh?
Yeah.
Can I get a hint as to like how recent it is?
It's recent. It's post. Okay. It's post. Let me just check the year so I can give you the year at least. It's post 2004.
Oh, okay. Post 2004. Okay.
Yeah, I thought the name was pretty unique.
I would say probably like I'm thinking my first thought is like PlayStation, like. 2, maybe 3, but I forgot when 3 was released.
It's not a PlayStation.
Oh, it's not a PlayStation. Okay. Yeah. Oh, Drastic.
Think of the letters. If you made Drastic two different words, you split it to two different words, what do you get?
Draw stick.
Yeah. So that should give you a hint. Like not what the words are, but like just think of like them as two different things.
Okay. Draw stick.
You want a very obvious clue?
No, give me 2 minutes. Give me 2 minutes. Okay. I want to think of
sure.
Draw sticks. Something games. Something with dual sticks. Dual analog. Draw sticks.
Oh my gosh, you're so close yet so far.
I'm thinking. Okay, I have two guesses. So one is arcade games.
No.
Damn. Yeah. Okay. Draw all the games, draw sticks, something with Xbox.
It's not the words don't mean anything. Okay. The words don't mean anything, but the letters do.
Okay, wait.
And not all the letters, just two letters.
Oh, DS. Nintendo DS, okay.
Yes, Drastic. So Drastic is one word, but they capitalize D and capitalize S.
Oh.
So I thought that was a cool way of them naming it.
Oh, that makes sense. Because I was like, what thing has a tablet? I was like, oh, the DS has like a pad. Now I remember now. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that made more sense.
Okay, how about this one? Dolphin.
Is Dream. Let me see. Dolphin. Oh, it sounds so familiar. I know like I've seen it somewhere.
Yeah. Dolphin is actually a code name for this game system. And then Dolphin is actually the code name in development for this game system. And then it became the name of the emulator for this game system.
Oh, God. I forgot. I have the stupid dolphin in my head and the thing, but I'm trying to remember the game system it was for.
Need a hint?
Wait. It uses a CD, right?
Kind of.
Okay, dang it. Okay, give me the hint.
The hint is the game system itself is also the name of the shape of the game system. Does that make sense?
The name of the game system is the shape of the game system.
Yeah.
Okay. God, it's like CD something.
No. Oh. The name of the game system reflects the actual shape of the console.
Oh. Like a dolphin?
No. Dolphin is the name of the emulator. And Dolphin is also the code name for this game system as well. But the actual game system that Dolphin emulates, the name of that system reflects the shape of that system, physical shape of that system.
Okay. Oh,
man. You're probably going to like beat yourself up once I tell you the answer.
Okay. Let me go to my limit. GameCube.
Yes, GameCube.
Okay.
Yes. So GameCube, and then it was codenamed Dolphin, but then the Dolphin emulator also ran Nintendo Wii, because GameCube and Nintendo Wii are not that much different.
Oh.
So yeah. Let me see. One more is Citra.
Citra. Is that before 2020, no, or 2004 and after?
It's after.
Okay. 2000. Okay. Citra. Okay. Citra, like an orange, like citrus. What's like an orange? Orange like a CD. Something round like a CD.
You're going down the wrong path. I actually don't even know why it's called... I mean, I know why it's called Citra, but I don't agree with how it links to the system.
Okay.
So I probably need to give you a hint for this because it's not very obvious.
Okay, give me the hint.
It is a handheld and it uses parallax technology.
3DS?
Yeah, it's 3DS. So the code name for the 3DS was like CTR, which is kind of like where they got the name Citra from.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. And it's funny because like the files, when you dump them for this emulator, their extension is CIA. And then like in order to like run them or something, you have to run the FBI. So it's like FBI, CIA. Yeah.
Secret service.
Yeah. All right. That is all of that. You have anything else you want to say?
No.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, no time for time travel. Signing off, Herdiger and Wolf Speed. See ya.
Bye. I loved
Power Club. Come with me if you want to live. I loved
Power Club. No time for time travel.